Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined by top London radio DJ. And I'm running out of ways to describe him. Pete Donaldson.
Muscle man.
It's quite an underwhelming introduction there. An underwhelming man.
No, I don't think you should. That's rude. That was a bit strong. I don't think you should deviate from the original. I think my brand is very much Top London DJ, certified Nihonophile. I think it all works, to be honest. I think that's what I'm going to put on my... on my gravestone when I pass.
Well, we got a question this week from somebody called Laurie.
Okay.
And they said, I have to introduce you as a Japanophile, right? Certified Japanophile.
Yeah.
And Laurie says, if Pete's a Japanophile, does that make him a Petophile?
Yes, I suppose it does, Chris. I mean, that word has been thrown around before. I mean, actually, that sounds terrible. I mean, as in the joke that Peter sounds like pedo has been thrown around before. That is correct, but...
It's thrown around before.
I once successfully rebranded myself, nickname-wise. I think, have I spoken about this before on this podcast? I was being called Donnie quite a lot.
Donnie?
I was being called Donnie at school, and I moved classes because the classes kind of deviated and you had to move into another class. And I basically successfully rebranded Donnie to PD with my new set of friends. So there are still people in Hartlepool, where I'm from, who occasionally call me PD. So there you go. Successful rebranding. Marketing.
I think Donnie's quite cool, though. A bit of a gangster undertone to it.
It wasn't back then, though. That's the problem. It wasn't back then. It was very much Donnie from New Kids on the Block. But I've never had a nose for a good nickname, so... Terrible.
Climbing the social hierarchy with your slick
successful
nickname.
Rebranding.
Yeah. I've had some weird messages today from my dad. My dad... You've seen him.
I've seen him in full flow in the Robot Wars.
Yes, on the British TV show Robot Wars, in which he built a robot and fought it to the death, quite literally, I think. I think it got destroyed. Anyway, he watched Natsuki the movie, and he's been messaging me loads of weird, stupid stuff that doesn't make much sense. I'm going to read out what he's written, because he's a ridiculous man by all accounts, who doesn't really understand things. And he said, Natsuki the movie, it was quite good, but you should actually make a real film, to quote, like in the style of Tom Cruise, whatever that means. I pointed out to him, a Tom Cruise movie has an average budget of $150 million, and Natsuki the movie had a budget of about £7.55. And they said, you should make a movie in the style of Tom Cruise, where Natsuki is the bad guy and you're Roger Moore. You've got Tokyo, which is like Kill Bill, and Tokyo Tower for a battle scene in it. And they built upon this by saying, or you and Natsuki save the world from the evil Ryotaro. You misspelt Ryotaro's name to sound like Ryotaro, which sounds like some sort of confectionery dessert. But I'm sitting there reading these crappy suggestions, thinking, how does your imagination work?
Chris, the most difficult.
How do these ideas happen?
The most difficult thing when it comes to finishing a big project, and most directors will tell you this, most producers will tell you this, you're just looking for the next project. Now, you've got three great ideas there.
Yeah, a Tom Cruise movie with Natsuki and me saving the world against the evil Ryota roll. A chocolate roll. I never thought I'd see the day that I heard Ryotaro's name in a variant that sounded like a dessert.
No, I'd quite like to see him do some forward rolls. Ryotaro, do the Ryotaro roll. It's like a branded Ryotaro kind of move. It's
combat
like a wrestling
move,
kind of, yeah, combat move. Like you do a forward roll and it's a Ryotaro roll. Magnificent stuff. Yeah, there's nothing like dads to sort of, like my dad's, I'm on the radio quite a bit. You know, I'm not famous or anything, but I'm on the radio quite a lot. And the amount of times my dad will, my dad will email me with a suggestion that I should be listening to a Radio 4 documentary at the same time that I'm on a different radio station. Like he has no concept of what I do, how I do it, what's important in my trade. It's all very strange.
I get the same thing. I get my family like ring me up, who I don't talk to my family that much just because I'm so busy and just awful at keeping in touch with
them. And also time difference is insane.
Yeah, 8-hour time difference, right? And they'll ring me up and be like, oh, there's a great documentary on about Japan tonight on Channel 4. And
it's I'm living it.
I don't have access to Channel 4. And even then, I don't care because I'm in Japan. I don't want to watch about it. I'm already here. Today, guys, we're going to be reading out some news articles, some news of the week, what's going on in Japan, hot topics right now, as well as answering your questions. We've got some questions towards the end of the podcast. But we've got three or four news stories. What is the first one? Donnie. And I'm resurrecting that nickname.
Well, the title goes as, or the URL in fact goes as, turn unwanted fat into next month's rent at new exercise-themed share house in Saitama. Or Saitama.
Saitama.
What truly sets the Grand Toda apart, apart from other residences, is the care and detail that went into cultivating an environment which supports its overall mantra of work smart, play hard, stay healthy. Basically, there's a new kind of share house, which I presume is some kind of hotel in Tora, Saitama Prefecture. To commemorate its grand opening in April, managing company Oak House Limited is offering a series of on-site open house and fitness trials, along with a truly impressive change your style, change your body Oak House fat purchasing campaign, in which tenants' weight loss can be exchanged for points to deduct from their monthly rent. The official press release states that residents who drop 2 kilograms, 4.4 pounds, are entitled to receive a 10,000 yen discount, which doesn't seem like a huge amount for nearly 5 pounds, basically.
I think it's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
So this share house, I think it's got like 36 rooms. It's quite a popular concept in Tokyo, given the price of rents, right?
Yeah.
And I nearly looked at it at one point when I was moving to Tokyo. Sharing a place and you get to meet people. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
But this one, this new place, it's got a gym in it. And if you lose weight, you get money off your rent, which is quite a novel concept.
And this isn't a government kind of initiative. This is just some company have decided to, you know, get involved with the whole kind of fat burning kind of situation that people find themselves in, this kind of like cycle of I need to lose weight. Oh, this will make me lose weight. I can save money. And it's just, it'll just be like a gym membership.
The question is, it doesn't say how long they give you to lose those 2 kilograms.
Yeah.
So you've got to lose 2 kilograms and then you get $90 discount off your rent, which is pretty. That's a pretty decent amount.
It's a pretty decent amount, but also sort of go, it can't be like weekly to monthly. It must be, I mean, it's probably just monthly, but also, like, two things. I don't like talking to my landlord at the best of times. Being weighed by my landlord would be even more harrowing. Oh, you haven't lost enough weight. Well, you didn't fix my bloody blinds, so sort your shit out, all right? And also,
Let alone losing £4.
Yeah, exactly. And I spent, I've probably been imbibing enough fat because the whole wall is covered in dirt. I've probably rubbed so much kind of like dirt and rot on my face. I've probably, you know, got the weight from that. And I've got the weight of the world on my shoulders. That's also made me heavier because of your terrible flat. I watched a documentary last night, or a short documentary about cutting, weight cutting for like UFC fighters. I'm not a fan of UFC or anything like that, but the idea of basically they've got to make weight. So say if like they're, I don't know, 10 stone and they've got to fight in a 9 stone division, they've got to lose weight to get to squeeze into this division. So they get weighed the day before. So they've got to cut as much weight as they can the day before, and it's harrowing, and it's all water weight. So what they do is they get in a bath, they get in a sauna, they get credit cards and sort of stroke the sweat off. They're not allowed to eat, they're not allowed to drink anything, they're allowed to chew ice, that's about it. And they've just got to, and they've got to sit in this bed with like sweaty clothes on to sweat all of the sweat out. Because if they don't make weight, they lose like, you know, 20 grand off their fee. And it looks bloody harrowing. It looks blooming horrible. And then once they've weighed in, they've got a race against time to put that weight back on. And it's just bizarre.
Good Lord.
What a life. So,
what
yeah,
must that do to their to their bodies?
They can lose 4 kilograms in an evening, you know, just by just by basically turning themselves into a big prune. So I'm hoping
suppose they're
that's
already pretty hulking big guys.
Yeah, but like, yeah, but they're still, because they're sort of like, I don't know, putting on a load of putting on a lot of protein, putting on muscle and stuff, like to make the weight, they've got just everybody does it, from like Conor McGregor down to Ronda Rousey, to all of these people have to cut weight. So the day before a fight, they're just desiccating themselves. It's flipping horrible. So I'm hoping none of that will go on.
I wish I'd done that myself. I did a challenge, a weight loss challenge a few years ago. I had to lose 10 kilograms in 10 weeks for 10,000 yen bet.
Bloody hell.
Not a lot in hindsight, but it was more a symbolic thing.
Yeah.
And I lost 8 kilograms by the end of it. And if I'd used this methodology of sweating it out and stuff, I might have been able to pull it off and actually edge closer to getting the 10 kilograms off. I felt like I should have tried a bit harder towards the end, to be honest.
Is that not really good, though? 8 kilograms in 10 weeks?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's pretty bloody good, isn't it?
I was happy. I wasn't happy to lose 10,000 yen, though, to my friend. So that was a bitter experience.
Oh, well, what are you going to do?
If only I had this share house then. I could have pulled it off and got a discount on my rent.
Yeah, but surely the same situation would have dictated itself. It's the same bet.
Yeah. Whenever I hear the phrase social experiment, it sends a shiver down my spine, just because the way people use it as an excuse to do ridiculous things. But there was an interesting social experiment last week. I know we often talk about crime and things in Japan, but about a week ago, there's a guy called Godfrey-chan who Godfrey was in Sendai Chan. For some sort of event, actually just a few streets away from where I am now.
Yeah.
And he left, I think he left 200 yen on the side somewhere in this convention as a test to see if the 200 yen would get taken by someone. And he left it there and came back to it a day or two later. And there was another 100 yen there. So rather than it being taken or stolen or whatever, somebody had added to the pile. And let that be testament to Japan's safety and the fact that you can leave your things wherever you want. I mean, that's actually more interest than most banks give you, just by leaving money literally on the side. That's more interest than you get at a bank.
200 yen, what's that like? That's not even a cup of coffee nowadays, is it? I mean, you get 100 yen is like a can of Coke, isn't it?
A small can of coffee.
Yeah, a can of Coke. You can get, all right, you can get
a
can of coffee. Two cans.
There you go.
Well, basically, most vending machines will sell you, it's like 100, is it 150 yen for like a can of hot or cold coffee? Sort of thing.
Yeah, about 120 yen for a can of cold, ice cold coffee.
Or if you're a fan of the grape juice drinks, the fizzy grape juice with the bits of grape in them, which makes me put on about 50 kilograms of weight every time I go to Japan, that's a little bit more expensive. But yeah, it's like, it's not a lot of money. So I do sort of go, if I left 50 pence on the floor and nobody picked up for a couple of days, I wouldn't be surprised, because like, there's a certain cut-off point that you don't pick up coins, I think. If I drop a penny, I'm not picking that up. I'm just a litterer when it comes to pennies.
No.
I can't be asked for coins at the best of time.
It's pretty decent. Yeah. If you're in the UK and you saw like a pound on the floor, you'd go for it. You wouldn't add to the pile, would you?
No, I don't know what that's about, to be honest.
You'd be gone and spent on McDonald's before you knew what was going on.
Oh, I'd love a McDonald's. I've not eaten today. Oh, I'd love a McDonald's. I can get a McDonald's, Chris. I'm unrepentant. I can go. I've been in the gym this week. I'll get a bloody McDonald's, goddammit.
I had it yesterday, to be fair. Pretty bad.
How's your
begun getting fit for the cycle. And, I just couldn't resist yesterday.
Yeah, but if you're cycling, say you're knocking off 400, 500 calories a day, you know, that's half a McDonald's, isn't it? So, you know.
Yeah, but I haven't started cycling yet.
Oh, right, okay.
I haven't done it. It wasn't good. I've actually lost a bit of weight recently. Not that anyone would know, because I haven't been on YouTube at all. But I'm hoping when I go back on next week for the first time, can you believe it? It's the first time in 2 months I'll have had a video up, apart from the Natsuki the movie thing. It'll be the first time in like 2 months I've actually had a video up.
Well, you,
so I'm hoping people notice my new slick, brilliant physique and go, wow, this is, what have you done? What's the secret?
Well, you, somebody made the point, it was Angie Kerr on via email. sent an email in that you've got a doppelganger. Barney Greenway, the lead singer of the death metal band Napalm Death. A very good, but a very, like, a decent band. I wouldn't say it's the worst lookalike in the world, to be honest, Chris, but he is a bit more older and a bit more overweight. But there is a shot when he's a bit younger and thinner where he's got long, blonde dyed hair, and it looks like you in a cockrock wig. It's beautiful.
I do get a lot of people saying I look like certain other. I've got people saying I look like Elon Musk, Johnny Depp. I don't get either of them.
Musk.
I know, right? But I do actually. I saw the resemblance. Napalm Death, this band. I looked them up, and yeah, there is actually a slightly worrying resemblance. Like, if you've got a moment after the podcast, look up Napalm Death. And you might see me in the band.
He's got a couple more chins than you. But I mean, you know, it's that happens when you get a little bit older. But yeah, he's a fine figure of a man, and you should be very pleased. It's better than Teabag from Prison Break.
Very pleased having someone that looks like me. Yeah. so proud.
The next news story. Oh my God! So I've experienced this week. This situation. Basically, there's a new law come in Japan for the minpaku. Goes into effect very soon. Basically, private lodging services. The government are getting involved and regulating stuff like Airbnb. A lot more. So Airbnb have been forced to drop nearly 80% of its listings for the services over the past 3 months. They had 62,000 properties in the country, and now they've only got 13,800, which is crazy. And I've actually experienced this, you know, in the flesh. I booked some accommodation in Tokyo for October. I might be going to Fukuoka for a couple of days next month, but that's kind of still up in the air. And it's completely different now. And the difference between hotel prices and Airbnb and also facilities is so different. And Airbnb is such a big help. This is actually, for anyone holidaying in Japan, it's a pretty serious problem, I think. Yeah. We made hay while the sun shone.
Homeowners in Japan will only be allowed to rent out their homes for a maximum of 180 days a year, and they've got to properly register. Now, that's a good idea to register and whatnot with the local authorities, but the way it's done at the moment is if you haven't registered your documents with the local Japanese government, or rather, if the local Japanese government hasn't approved your property, then you're not listed. Airbnb can't legally list you.
Right.
So I've got a good friend in Iwate who I've stayed with, who has an Airbnb place. It's a great place. And he's been putting his documents in, but the local government's been extremely slow to process them.
Of course,
and so he's had to cancel bookings, and he can't actually take any bookings at the moment. So it's caused him real financial trouble. It's bad for his image of his property, for people coming to stay.
Yeah.
So it's not been handled very well, very competently by, I think, Japanese local authorities. So yeah, it's a bit worrying. I would deter people from using Airbnb for the time being until it's sorted out.
Definitely.
It should be all right in 3 or 4 months, but yeah, it's a little bit worrying. They've done it because lots of hotels have been built for the Olympics, and I think the hotel lobby has put pressure on the Japanese government because they want to get their money back, basically, from spending all this money on hotels. I can see it from everyone's side, but yeah, it's a little bit annoying. It feels like they've not done this very well.
No, I think every, you know, these are relatively new technologies, and let's face it, governments aren't particularly up on, you know, technology or new developments. And I think when you're dealing with anything like housing codes and insurance and things like that, these things move like bloody glaciers. It's very, very slow. Obviously, Silicon Valley very quick, and they want things done yesterday. And you know, there's a thing in my contract for my rental in the middle of Soho that says you can't rent anything out to Airbnb. You know, I can see it their way as well. You know, if you're renting from somebody and you have a legitimate problem or quandary with somebody else who lives in your building, if it's an Airbnb, what recourse do you really have? You know, they're gone in a few weeks. It's difficult. It'll all settle down, I'm sure. But bottom line is, it's affected my bottom line. And I've had to pay more money.
Poor old pig. I mean, the sharing economy in general is a bit late to Japan. It's been a bit... Like, there's Uber as well.
Yeah.
I think you can get Uber Black, the kind of expensive taxi service. But, yeah, you can't get normal Uber in Japan because the taxi lobby is formidable in Japan. I mean, Japan has so many taxis anyway. I've never really needed an Uber just because if you're in a city, there is just a ridiculous amount. I don't know how they're all in business, to be honest, in the first place. So I don't think Uber will be coming to Japan properly for the foreseeable future, just because the taxi lobby is too powerful.
The last time I went to Japan, I had my first illegal taxi. I've never, even though it's a major city, Tokyo, it's the first time I've ever got into a taxi that wasn't, you know, a taxi effectively. Or it might have been a taxi,
A dude
in a cool hat just picked us up. This old bloke just went, "Where do you want to go?" Our friend was rather worse for wear, so it was probably for the best that it wasn't a legal taxi. But this guy drove like a flipping maniac, really, really quick through all the tunnels. I can't remember where we were. We were somewhere south of Shibuya, but like him hurtling through these bloody tunnels, I was like, bloody hell, mate, in his rather expensive car. But he had this screen on, and he was obsessed with Lady Gaga. He was like, "Do you like Lady Gaga?" What? And he just kept on playing Lady Gaga videos at us.
It sounds much more exciting than a normal taxi. How did you know it wasn't real, though? How do you know? Was there no...
It was just a dude's car. There was no doilies down. It wasn't a taxi. It just wasn't a taxi, basically.
Why did you get in it? At what point do you think this was a good idea?
All right, my
a man in a hat playing Lady Gaga on a TV screen.
He was a lovely bloke, and he just loved a bit of Lady Gaga. Adorable.
Did you get extortionate prices, or was he reasonable?
I think it was only like 10,000 yen. I don't think we were going that far. Sorry, 10,000 yen. I think it was only like 1,000 yen, which is, you know, what's that, 8 quid?
Probably cheaper than a real taxi.
It genuinely was. It's insane. So yeah, I think when I first went to Japan, I just always assumed that like 10,000 was 10 quid. So like pretty much every drink I was buying was 10 quid. And I was like, God, this is expensive. But that was never the case. That was never the case that it was £10. So it was kind of floating around the 7.5 kind of way. And I think coming from London, it kind of inoculates you to any price of any beer. Because most beers nowadays are like 7 quid in London. It's dreadful.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania. Too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Are you a YouTuber?
Wow.
Let's dive into some emails from you guys, from the fax machine.
Yes.
What have we got, Pete?
Well, the first email is quite nice. It's like a snapshot into someone's life. Hello, Chris and Pete. This is from Alexander. Enjoy the podcast? Yes, says loving the podcast, but I downgraded it from loving the podcast. Enjoying the podcast. It has become part of my routine every Thursday where I buy a cold can of Dr. Pepper and relax by the river, which I think is amazing. So, like,
by
he's
the river.
By the river. So he's next to a river right now. Hello, Alexander. I hope you're enjoying the scene. I presume he does this in warm weather rather than cold weather. But, yeah, he's currently enjoying the podcast in front of a river. On the subject of cold drinks, what drinks are popular in Japan and what is unique over there? Also, what is your favourite?
Probably cow piss.
Cow piss is lovely. Lovely milky
reasons.
Kind of like... It's like a big Yakult, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like Yakult, fizzy carbonated Yakult, a bit of a yogurt kind of drink. It's quite refreshing.
Mm.
But the two reasons I like cow piss, other than the flavour, the second reason I like it is it's the reason for my YouTube channel success in general. because the second video I ever made, I think I brought it up. I said, oh, there's this drink, it tastes weird, it's called cow piss. And I knew that it sounded like cow piss, as in an animal. Piss, yeah. Anyway, lots of American viewers commented on that in the comments section. They wrote like, oh my God, it sounds like you're saying cow piss. And I was. It was intentional. But about 1,000 people, about 1,000 Americans commented on this, saying, oh my God, it sounds like you're saying cow piss. And that actually promoted the video because of the interaction, the audience interaction. The video got boosted and it got over 1 million views in a few weeks. So cow piss... I built my channel off of cow piss. Don't quote me on that. Or if you do quote me on that, give some context.
What I like about that is you're kind of, you spend all this time doing these beautiful documentaries and stuff, and the most popular videos are you just going to a shop and going, look at this! Look at this!
It's shocking, isn't it?
It's annoying, isn't it?
I remember I made a video a few years ago of some McDonald's chocolate fries.
Yeah.
That went viral. It took me like 4 minutes to make and eat. And that went viral. Compared to a video I spent like 2 weeks on that got viewed by about 4 people. Honestly. And then there was the North Korean thing last year. I filmed a North Korean missile, 2 million views.
Yeah.
Took about 4 minutes to make. So annoying. Video. The moral of the story is, if you're a new YouTuber, feature some cow piss and don't put too much effort into your videos and it'll probably go viral.
definitely. Hi Pete and Chris, that's what I'm going to do next time I'm over. I'm just going to do 3 second videos of me pointing at ice creams. I like, look at this ice cream, strawberry flavoured, look at this. Going to one of those vending machines. I'm going to pour cow piss on it. And those big ice creams you get in Osaka. It's like a cone, but like they just keep on building and building the ice cream until it's about like a foot long. It's really tall, and it's actually really quite hard to eat. Have you seen those before?
I've never heard of this. Again, it's one of the things either you've made up, which we probably have. It's like those big ice creams in Osaka that are really long. You love long things. Long fucking, long confectionery. Long ice cream. You have an obsession.
You brought the long man thing up. Theodore sent an email in. Hi, Pete and Chris. I love your podcast and listen to them every Thursday morning, Swedish time. I went to a Swedish job interview time. Yesterday and it went horrible. What are your tips for job interviews, especially the ones in Japan? Ooh.
Don't know, really. Taking some cow piss and ice cream.
Have you had like one job interview in the last 10 years, though, haven't you?
You know, I've had a job interview in Japan at all, to be honest. I've never had a job interview in Japan. The JET, the Japan Exchange Teaching Program interview for teaching English in Japan, done in the Japanese Embassy in London.
Ah.
That was pretty intimidating.
Mm.
That's a story for another time, because I guess we'll dedicate a whole episode to that JET program and teaching English. But it was pretty intimidating. You sort of go in and there was a Japanese guy and a foreign woman sitting there, and they interview you for like 30 minutes and they've forensically gone over your CV. But I remember I just tried to smile a lot. I smiled and I looked happy and I was very happy and superficial. So be happy and superficial.
Yeah, I don't know how it works in Sweden, but I think talking about yourself is so un-British. We don't do a lot of it. It's sort of seen as being a little bit arrogant, and you're sort of not between British people and American people. American people sell themselves really well, and people like it when they're successful, and they love getting involved in people's lives. We're very closed off, and we're really repressed and weird, and we think that anybody who talks about themselves and talks about their achievements is kind of arrogant. So it goes completely against what we're about.
I had that problem when I was going to like business networking events, talking about my YouTube channel, right? Because people go, "What do you do, Chris?" And I'd go, "Oh, I make a video on the YouTube." And they go, "Oh, right. Oh, look, over here is a sandwich." And they'd walk off. And what I should have been doing is going, "Oh, yeah, 90 million people have watched my video. And I've got 800,000 subscribers.
Yeah.
And I've been on TV and newspapers. And I'm better than you. So go away. I'm having a sandwich." But you know, you've got to get the balance right.
Yeah, definitely.
You kind of want to be an arrogant dickhead, but you can't be. So if you're going into a job interview, my advice is here's some actual real advice. Very quickly, just make sure the person who's interviewing you, make sure they know why you'd be good for their company, and show that you've researched their company.
Yeah,
why you would fit in there. What is it you can give them? That's all they're looking for.
Yeah,
I used to do a little bit of a job as a recruitment consultant, and I went through hundreds of CVs, and that's one of the things you look for. You know, what is it they can add to your business, and what can you give to them? So, do that. Good luck. I wonder what went wrong with Theodore's interview in Sweden.
I mean,
it says it went horribly wrong. If you're listening, Theodore, give us some more info. I want to know how it went wrong. And in the next podcast, we'll read it out.
How's your life bad, Theodore? Let us know. As I said, the only...
Learn from Theodore's mistakes.
I've only ever had like 3 or 4 job interviews. I think I've gotten every job. They weren't particularly high-powered jobs.
Right,
but
smug.
I'm just saying, the only job interview I went for and didn't get is the bloody JET programme. It wasn't even JET. It was probably one of the other ones. But, so there we go. I fell at a hurdle. So Chris got through where I didn't. Next email. Haroon. Great name. Loving that. Haroon says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. I was wondering if the long working hours of Japanese people could affect your social life and if you found that you had to get used to any sort of timing when you were teaching."
Punctuality, Haroon. Punctuality is everything.
You've got
to be there like half an hour before the start of work.
Right.
Work started at 8:20, so everyone used to get in about 8 o'clock. And work finished at about 5:30. It's a little bit of a grey area with teaching. But, you know, you'd have teachers in there till 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. Because in Japan, half the job is actually just being present. You don't even have to be doing anything. As I said before, like, you just have to be present. So I often found I did sit at my desk literally doing nothing after work just to look good sometimes if I felt I needed to improve my image temporarily. And you do have to go out drinking quite a lot, I think. As a foreigner, you do get around that a little bit. You can get away with it by not always getting involved. But Japanese businessmen, salarymen have to always go out drinking after work. It's almost seen as part of the job. So yeah, it's quite unfortunate. That's why so many people in Japan are overworked. You know, you've got to be always at work, even when there is no work, and B, you got to go out and drink a lot. So yeah, I'm no surprise people get burnt out from it, to be honest.
And it's no wonder there's coffee machines on every corner as well.
Yeah, but if you're lucky, you can find a few hundred yen coins lying around and you can purchase some coffee out of a vending machine.
Get yourself a Natsuki breakfast.
Yeah. Hi, Chris and Pete. Natsuki breakfast. It's quite an expensive breakfast.
Yeah.
30 cigarettes and two coffee. No, what was it? One coffee.
One
and
coffee,
two cigarettes.
Yeah. So he said, no, he said,
probably get
he said
300 yen.
One cigarette and another cigarette breakfast. And then he looks at his cat and goes, breakfast.
A lot of people, if you watch Natsuki the movie, a lot of people screenshotted that because there's a shot of just Natsuki looking hungrily at his cat and it just says, my breakfast, in subtitles. Could have been a dark turn to the start of Natsuki the movie. Just Natsuki eating his cat on his breakfast table, cigarette in hand.
Well,
ski for his cat.
Ski means to like or to ski means yeah, to like, yeah. Doesn't it? So Natsuki, it cat ski. Natsuki likes cat. No. Natsuki is cat ski. Come on, Chris, get involved. The Japanese love a pun.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that.
Natsuki,
hi, Chris and Pete. Thanks for an awesome podcast. I'm trying to learn Japanese, and one thing I find absolutely fascinating is the complex writing system. I love how you can spell names differently using different kanji characters.
Mm.
My question is, what's your favourite Japanese word and what's your favourite English word? From Eric from Sweden.
Beautiful.
Is this podcast exclusively listened to by people from Sweden?
Sorry, I'm so allergic to Swedish people. I just sneezed there. Apologies. There's a lot of Swedes listening.
I'm not complaining. I like Swedish people.
Have you ever been to Sweden before?
Yeah,
I think you have, haven't you?
I have been to Sweden. I've been to Gothenburg.
Oh, I love Sweden.
That's all I remember from my trip to Sweden.
I was about nine years old,
to be fair.
All right, fair.
I remember we went to Gothenburg for a day, and we went to McDonald's, and that was my trip to Sweden. It was pretty disappointing in hindsight. I'd love to go again.
It's a beautiful part of the world.
But to the question in hand, do you have any favourite Japanese words, Pete?
I like kanpai and opai, and how they are very similar.
Let's drink and breasts. Brilliant.
Yes, let's drink.
I wouldn't expect
kanpai.
Anything less.
Yeah. Kanpai is let's drink, and opai is boobies. I really like that. That's funny.
And what's your favourite English word?
It's let's drink and boobies. It's pretty much, that's my night out. That's pretty much a night out, to be honest, Chris. Let's drink and boobies.
Well, it's not, because I've been on a night out with you, and it's only the first one,
yeah,
not the second one.
Very
my favourite
much.
English word is empire. I don't know why, I just love that word.
Empire.
It sounds dark,
it sounds powerful, it sounds sinister.
You
sound
like
a man
Star Wars.
You sound like a right Robin. You sound like a man who's going to be taking over the world. Empire.
Sounds like a crappy Bond villain's line. You know what my favourite word is, Mr. Bond? Empire.
Boobies.
Right, yeah, all right, get out. My favourite Japanese word, though, I don't actually know. Off the top of my head, do I have a favourite Japanese word?
I'm trying to think what word you is it a word you use a lot or the rhythm of it, because the great thing about Japan is like they love puns and they like players on words as much as we do, because we spoke about like things like suika before, to slide and, you know, to pay or something. I can't remember what it was, but I sort of said, why isn't there a watermelon on it, because suika means watermelon, but it's nothing to do with watermelon, it's to do with the noise. They love onomatopoeia as well, the Japanese. It's they're very like us in that regard.
Namamugi, namagome, namatamago. Namamugi, namagome, namatamago. Oh, God, I can't say it now. I've blown it. I've blown it.
What
but
is
it's
that?
Like raw egg, raw wheat, raw something. Raw egg.
Ah, so nama means raw.
Namamugi,
then.
Namamugi is like raw wheat.
Mm.
Namakome is like raw rice. And namatamago is raw egg.
Right.
But I've blown it. I can't say it fast now.
I think we spoke about
it was going well.
I think we spoke about nomisugi before, which is to drink too much. Can you? I was going to ask you, Chris, as my impromptu Japanese teacher. Mm. Could you say tabisugi?
Tabisugiru.
Tabisugi.
Yeah. Like,
as in to eat too much. Yeah. Nomisugi.
Yeah,
tabisugi.
Sugiru means too much. You just put it on behind any verb. Tabisugita.
Right.
Nomisugita. I ate too much, drank too much.
I see.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool little thing. Whack it on the back and it means you've done too much of it.
I've done too much.
Like, isogashi sugiru. Isogashi sugiru. It means like I've been too busy.
Right.
Natsuki
okay.
uses that one a lot.
Well, we learnt, what was it? Natsukushi is it Natsukushi, which is retro?
Good, last week's word.
Nostalgia?
Natsukashi means...
Natsukashi.
Nostalgic.
Oh.
Like, oh, that takes me back. Natsukashi. Well, takes me back.
Well, I half remembered it. We talk about, I think Eric mentioned kanji. My favourite kanji, I know about three, which is really useful. Right. And it's usually for you working out the how to turn on a washing machine in an Airbnb. But, because most Airbnbs do have washing machines and it's great. But I quite like the kanji for man, which is a concatenation of the rice field and power. So you got the rice field at the top and power at the bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the power for the rice field, the people who would work in the rice field, would be men back in the day. And so rice field plus power means man. And that's beautiful.
And it's quite useful if you're going into a bar or izakaya or onsen. Because a lot of them aren't labelled which one you're going in, if it's male or female. They're not that well labelled. They've got kanji on. But if you don't know kanji, you can lead to some pretty treacherous situations, as I've had in the past, wandering into the wrong room. So as I think I said in the previous video, they're the two kanji worth knowing, the one for male and the one for female. Yeah. Mm. The one for male is power rice field.
Isn't that amazing? I love that. And rice field just looks like the end of a Battenberg. So there we go.
Just a square with a cross in
just
it.
Just a square with a cross in it.
Like a real rice field.
I think we've run out of time, Chris. We've got to get out of here, but we'll be back next week, won't we?
We have. It's gone too fast. We'll be answering more questions from you guys next week. Send in your messages to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be talking about more contemporary news issues going on at the moment and answering your questions. And yes, now we must fly. No matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.